This is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. Petersburg's police chief sued its employer, the borough, and the two parties have officially settled the matter out of court. That means the claim about the chief's First Amendment rights will not go to trial this summer. KFSK's Olivia Rose reports.
Police Chief James Kerr testified to Petersburg's Borough Assembly against enforcing a masking mandate back in 2021. He said he was speaking as a private citizen, but this ultimately snowballed into a multi-year legal battle between Kerr and the borough. Kerr claimed the borough defamed him, portrayed him in a false light, and violated his constitutional right to free speech. But in March, a federal court in Juneau ruled in favor of the borough on most of the claims. The last remaining claim, however, concerned the police chief's free speech rights, and the court left that decision up to either a jury trial in August or for the parties to settle through mediation. The two sides gave mediation a try last month, and the borough sent out a 5-sentence press release in mid-June announcing they'd reached a settlement. Basically, the borough's risk pool insurance will pay Kerr $70,000 as part of the agreement. According to the release, the parties believe that it's important for borough officials to work well together and that settling the case is what's best for the public. It says both sides made compromises, but it doesn't get into any specifics. They've also agreed not to comment further publicly about the settlement. The case legally ended earlier this month. The borough's attorneys didn't respond to multiple requests for clarifying information, and Kerr's attorneys did not provide answers either. The parties reached that agreement on June 11th, and the final court filing in early July officially closed the case, with all of Kerr's claims against the defendants formally dismissed. In Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
The Juneau School District Board of Education accepted a $145,000 grant from a Juneau philanthropic foundation Monday. The money from the Juneau Community Foundation will maintain a counselor position at Juneau Douglas High School, Yada'at Kathle, for another year and go toward professional development for counselors. The grant money is the last piece in the funding puzzle that allows the district to keep counseling services at the same level as last year at the middle and high school. Grant funding for 3 positions ended earlier this year. The board originally budgeted to retain 2 of them. The new grant takes care of the last position. This is the 3rd position the board added this month as the group gears up for the next school year that starts August 15th. But funding remains uncertain on a state and federal level. The federal government has blocked more than $400,000 the district planned on using for English language learners, professional development, and enrichment education. The district also estimates a proposed state regulation change from the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development could cost it at least $8 million in local funding and services. A Juneau man pleaded guilty to killing a 1-month-old infant in his care last year. Superior Court Judge Amy Mead approved a plea deal earlier this week. 45-year-old James White was charged with second-degree murder. In an agreement with the state, prosecutors dismissed the 3 lesser charges. Mead will sentence White later this year to serve between 20 and 99 years in prison, but he can only serve a maximum of 40 years of active jail time. Juneau police arrested White in November of last year. His arrest came 7 months after emergency responders were called to a hotel in Juneau last spring following a report that an infant wasn't breathing. Bartlett Regional Hospital later pronounced the baby girl dead due to, quote, significant physical injuries to the head. An autopsy showed blunt force injury to the head as the cause of her death. White was the infant's caregiver at the time of the incident and was at the hotel with other children when responders arrived. He denied any wrongdoing at the time and was not arrested. After his arrest, a spokesperson for the Juneau Police Department said it took a months-long investigation to gather enough probable cause to arrest him for the infant's death. White was already being held at Lemon Creek Correctional Center for a prior alleged domestic violence assault when he was charged. He's since been transferred to Goose Creek Correctional Center in Wasilla and is not allowed bail leading up to his sentencing. A retired school teacher and principal from the small southeast Alaska city of Angoon entered Alaska's 2026 governor's race earlier this month. James Parkin filed a letter of intent to run for governor on July 1st. He is one of 6 Republican candidates, including Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, former State Senator Click Bishop, and Mat-Su Borough Mayor Edna DeVries. It is Parkin's first campaign for public office. In an interview earlier this week, Parkin said he is a supporter of large permanent fund dividends, increased state funding to school districts, and the revival of a pension plan for state employees. He also wants to eliminate homelessness. He said if elected, he believes he can lead the state to achieve all of those priorities while still cutting back state spending.
I think what we need to do is work on efficiency. And I think that the state has been doing some good things in that direction. And I'd just like to push us forward a little bit more. I have some other ideas I think that will be helpful to move us towards a budget that's more sustainable.
The state would need to make severe cuts to services or dramatically increase its revenue to pay for a full statutory dividend. Its expenses would also increase if there's a significant boost in funding to schools. While he says he has a few ideas to cut down on spending, Parkin says it doesn't include implementing a state income tax. Parkin has lived in Alaska for more than 30 years, living in different parts of the state before settling in Angoon. Parkin is a retired teacher and principal at Angoon's Chatham School District. He now works for Core Alaska's Kensington Mine near Juneau. He says Alaska voters should choose him over other Republican candidates because he intends to work with the Alaska state legislature, not against it, to make changes constituents have been asking for.
You know, it's a cooperative and collaborative thing. The governor and the legislature and the departments, we've all got to work together to come up with some ideas, some new ideas, some fresh ideas that are going to eliminate the waste, that are going to increase the efficiency.
No registered Democratic candidates have yet entered the 2026 governor's race. Current Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy is terming out and cannot seek re-election. Camping in certain public spaces in Anchorage will soon be a criminal offense after the assembly on Tuesday narrowly approved a proposal backed by the mayor. The ordinance makes it a misdemeanor for homeless residents to camp on streets, sidewalks, railroad tracks, and bridges, and within 200 feet of major trail systems. It also criminalizes camping within 500 feet of schools, playgrounds, childcare centers, and homeless shelters. Initially, the ordinance would have banned all public camping, but Mayor Suzanne LaFrance introduced a more narrow version that she says targets public safety concerns at large camps.
Letting people permanently camp in public spaces is not safe. It's not healthy. It's not a solution.
The offenses would be a mix of Class A and Class B misdemeanors, though the version passed by the Assembly greatly reduces the fines associated with those crimes. Midtown Anchorage Assembly member Erin Baldwin Day voted against the ordinance. She says public camping is already prohibited by law, and the city doesn't have any sanctioned camping areas.
What this ordinance does is it asks us to identify criminalized areas, special areas, but it turns a completely blind eye to the fact that there is no legal place for folks who are unsheltered.
The ordinance was approved 7-5 and takes effect in a week. And the native village of Klukwan, just north of Haines, is grappling with landslide risk that's intensifying with climate change. The village is in the thick of a research project to better understand the threat, and as Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, residents hope the information will guide housing development in years to come.
Decades ago in the Chilkat Valley, heavy rains would send mud flows tumbling down the Tokchanuk Mountains, over the International Highway, and into Klukwan. Dan Hotch remembers it well. Standing next to a swiftly moving creek during a field visit to the slide area in June, he says the slides in the 70s, 80s, and 90s would damage buildings and send rocks and mud under the deck of his family's home.
Growing up as a kid, we hated August and September weather because we knew the rains were coming and we knew the water was going to be coming down and there was no way to really stop it.
Then, about 25 years ago, a community member built a berm to direct the debris down another slide path and away from the village. It worked, says Hotch, who is now an environmental specialist with the Chilkat Indian Village.
We haven't had that in about 30 years come through there.
But that's starting to shift as the slide path evolves. So far, there haven't been any major incidents, but recent mapping and local observations indicate that sediment has started surging out of the main channel and veering back toward Klukwan. That has major implications for the community's long-term future. The village wants to build more housing for its roughly 90 residents, but they also want to expand the community to make it possible for tribal members who don't live there to move there. But the major question is where that housing should go, given that the community is sandwiched between two intensifying geohazards, erosion and flooding from rivers to the west, and landslide risk from mountains to the east, says Jess Kaiser Forster, who works with the village on environmental issues.
Well, before we put a bunch of homes here, we need to ensure that they're sustainable over the long term from this potential hazard.
The conundrum isn't isolated to Klukwan. Natural disasters are becoming more destructive as communities expand into the wilderness and temperatures rise with climate change. It's forcing a global reckoning over how to protect existing homes and where to develop new ones. Shauna Hotch is the tribal liaison for Clequan's Tribal Emergency Operations Center. She says the threat really hit home in 2020 when a landslide killed two people in Haines.
We realized that we were, I guess, underprepared if an event like that were to happen in Clequan.
Work is already underway to better understand and reduce those risks.
We're walking across large mounds of debris, big boulders, lots of fine-grained sediment.
That's Josh Roaring, a University of Oregon-based geomorphologist involved in the project. On a recent field visit to Clequan, he and the tribe's environmental staff drove up a steep gravel road along the main slide area. Walking through a dense patch of forest, he points to little black boxes strapped high on trees.
And these are called infrasound sensors. So they're recording things that we are not hearing, but it is happening in the environment.
Think things wind, like rain, and rockfall high in the mountains. That data, combined with camera footage, provides crucial context about what triggers rockfalls and mudflows and when those flows are more likely to surge toward the village. A new weather station will provide Clequan with more accurate forecasting. Researchers have also mapped existing slide paths in the area and how they're changing over time. For now, Roaring says, the goal is to develop a baseline of what exactly is happening on the hillside and why. But even that is incredibly complicated.
The dynamic nature of this channel is what means that this is going to be a long-term project.
Even so, the tribe will ideally be able to use the information for a few purposes. First, planning new berms to divert the slide away from the village and supporting grant applications to fund the work. And second, safe community development. Hotch says that could encourage tribal members to move home. The idea is personal. He moved back to Clequan about a decade ago after spending a number of years in Oregon for boarding school and later for work.
Great to be home. We need more people back at home.
The ongoing research, at least in theory, is an early step in that direction. In Clequan, I'm Avery Elfelt.
This is KTOO.